Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Mary Meller, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through a generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to all student groups of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences in Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website, www.hinckley.utah.edu, for more information. The title of today's forum is Sex Education, Utah PTA, and the Legislature. Our distinguished guests are Liz Zinter, the Utah PTA and President-elect, and Don Davies, the Utah PTA Legislative Vice President. Please welcome me in welcoming our guests.
Thank you very much. I'm so excited to be here today, and looks like we have a good group. First question I want to ask you is, who knows what PTA stands for? Excellent. Okay. Parent Teacher Association means parents. That means moms and dads, grandparents, teachers working together for the schools. Now there is PTSA. What does that S stand for? Students. Yeah. How many of you belong to a PTSA in junior high or high school? Okay. That's typically how our junior highs and high schools are organized as PTSAs. So the students are involved. They get to have representation on the board. They get to give their input and help plan things. So the Utah PTA is part of a national organization. They're headquartered in Washington, D.C. They advocate for children. Their purposes are the same as ours, to every child one voice, to do what's best for children. That's what we do here. And they're wonderful, fantastic. By the way, the National PTA President's name is Betsy Landers. She's a volunteer, just like all the rest of us. Our Utah PTA President is Gaynell Rogers. She was planning to be here today, but needed to go down to the Nebo District to talk to some of their schools, and so she's sorry she couldn't be here. The term for a president is 2 years, and for president-elect is 2 years. So I'm in the beginning of my second term as president-elect, and starting July 1st of 2013, I'll become president for 2 years, and then I'll have a president-elect. We have our legislative PTA legislative vice president here, Dawn Davies, and she handles all the legislative issues, so she'll be talking to you today. So we have seven commissioners on our board. We have our education commissioner, community involvement, family life, health, individual development, safety, and student involvement. So I was a health commissioner for 3 years. My background is I'm a radiologic technologist. I do mammography for St. Mark's Hospital, PRN, which means I fill in, because I don't have time to have a full-time or even a part-time job. PTA takes about 30 to 40 hours of a week, and that's not paid. Our president is not paid. Dawn's not paid. None of these commissioners are paid, but they spend... As a commissioner, I spend almost that much time, especially during the legislature, up at the Capitol and watching the bills. So these commissioners are all watching bills up at the legislature under their particular area. So education bills, that's a busy one. Not so much community involvement and individual development, but family life, they're looking at bills that have to do with family issues, child abuse, adoption, after-school programs, preschool, and then health. Sex education came under health, and there's lots of other things with health, but the sex ed issue came up a couple of times while I was health commissioner, and it's kind of a tricky issue, and I got a lot of education on the issue, even though being a health professional, I knew it very well as far as the education in the schools part of that. So normally, as a president-elect, I would not be following a bill and being so out, talking to the bill and all that. But having had that experience and knowing the history, I ended up being a little more involved in this last sex ed bill that was very well known to probably most of you. We have a safety commissioner who works a lot with the safety issues, which is, you know, like seatbelts in cars and bullying and all those kinds of issues. And then student involvement doesn't really do much at the legislature, although they have been involved in teen dating violence, trying to get a bill passed to give teens the ability to get restraining orders and that kind of thing to protect them from those kinds of issues. But they work with a student board. Okay, so we're going to talk about sex today, the 2009 sex ed bill, HB 189. Was called Instruction in Health Amendments, and the sponsor was Representative Lynn Hemingway, and it was brought, and you probably know how bills come about. If somebody goes to a legislator and says, we want to do a bill on this, mostly that's how it is. Sometimes they just initiate their own, but a lot of times it's a group that goes to a legislator, and they were concerned about the rise in STIs. Now, STI is STD. They've changed it. Used to be venereal disease. Then they changed it to sexually transmitted infections instead of diseases. So you'll see STI, you'll see STD on some older information that I have here, but that's all sexually transmitted infections or diseases, and teen pregnancy. So here's some stats. This is kind of an interesting thing, and it's from 2011. Now, this isn't all sexually transmitted infections, as you can see, but this is the top 10 reportable diseases in Utah in 2011, and look how much. Chlamydia, 7,080 cases, and the number two, hepatitis C, 963. Look at that difference. Chlamydia is huge, big problem in Utah. It goes down to pertussis, 645, and then down to number eight, gonorrhea, is 277 cases, and as you can see, we've got a big problem, especially with chlamydia. Okay, Utah teen pregnancy rates. This is per 1,000 females age 15 to 19 in Utah and U.S. Okay, as you can see, the rates have they're pretty much pretty close to the same. They went down a little bit in 2010 to 32.0, but we are way below the U.S. as you can see. So. We don't have the 2009-2010 statistics there, but 2008, we're about half what the U.S. is. So, I mean, we're doing well, but we still have a problem. We still have an issue that we need to deal with. Okay, this is kind of an interesting thing. This says the U.S. data for 2010, 34.2 per 1,000 females, age 15 to 19, in the U.S. In Utah, the average was 27.6. Then we have some neighborhoods that were very high, 94.3 for Glendale. That's sort of over by the Utah Fair Park, northwestern Salt Lake. Rose Park, that's near there, West Valley East, downtown Ogden, and South Salt Lake. So these are very high compared to the national average, 94.3, 93.4. These are there's a lot of concern. So this sex ed bill, HB 189, they wanted to change just a little bit of the wording in the health curriculum. They wanted to allow teachers to encourage the use of contraception rather than just giving information about it. And they would have allowed demonstrations of contraceptive of condoms in the classroom. Okay, so the reason they wanted to do this is we told you before, the STDs and teen pregnancy, but there's a fear factor with the health teachers. Some of them, and a lot of them, this is the case, they're not teaching enough. They're not teaching at all about contraception when they could be, or they're not giving enough information because there is a law, and they have to be very careful not to cross that line of encouraging. And so this was to make it so that the teachers would feel a little more comfortable giving information about contraception and encouraging it, okay? Well, with the Utah PTA, we aren't just a few people that make all the decisions for everybody. We have our whole state organizations. We have PTA presidents everywhere in the state. We have more Utah schools are PTA than are not. And in the national PTA, we have the highest number of PTA schools per percentage of high PTA schools in the nation. So PTA is real big here. We're very strong. But we don't speak for just ourselves. We speak for the whole state. So how do we know what the rest of the state wants? We know because they get to vote on it. So we have our state convention every May. We bring forth resolutions. There's probably, I think we've done as many as five in a convention, but there's usually two or three. Well, in the year 2000, this resolution came up and was voted on. I remember I was there. There was a lot of debate, but it was made to be what parents, remember, parents are the ones that are voting on these, not kids. So it's probably different than it would look if it was kids that was voting on it, but this is parents. And so this resolution, first of all, a resolution is a position statement or position statements. We do those too. They're official documents that outline the opinion, will, or intent of the association to address problems, situations, or concerns that affect children and youth and require action to seek resolution on the issue. Okay? So if you want to look at all our resolutions, this is a website, www.utahpta.org/resolutions-position-statements. We have resolutions under all those commissions that I showed you. There's education resolutions, safety resolutions, health, family life, okay? Now, this resolution that we use, sex education in public schools, these are some of the resolved statements. We have whereas statements that kind of give the background information, and then we use the resolved statements, okay? And this is what was voted on in 2000 by the parents. This is what we use as our basis for our position on any bill, is the resolved statements on a resolution, okay? So we were able to take a position on that sex ed bill because of this resolution, and this is what it says. Resolve that Utah PTA encourages the approval of programs that assist parents in assuming their responsibility as the primary educators of their children in the sensitive and vital area of sex education. So parents want to be the main teachers of this. That Utah PTA supports school-based sex education programs that support quality family living and convey the reasons why adolescents should be abstinent before marriage and practice complete fidelity within marriage. So abstinence was really key. That had that word had to be in there because that is what the parents want their children to do. That Utah PTA support the premise that any approved sex education curriculum should teach the individual to make responsible choices and warn students that the only safe method of prevention is abstinence. And should identify the consequences of premarital sexual activity for adolescents with respect to pregnancy and STDs, and this is the key part, the limitations of contraceptives and condoms, and as a preventative strategy, and should not imply or condone experimentation in sexual activity of any kind. So what do you think our position on that bill was? Support or oppose? Support? Anybody else? Should not imply or condone experimentation in sexual activity of any kind. We opposed the bill, okay? Because of that resolution, we did not want the teachers to encourage students to go ahead, have sex, just use a condom, okay? That's not the message we wanted the kids to hear. And according to that resolution, the rest of the state didn't want that to be heard. So this is what happened. The bill did fail. So the state, Utah State Office of Education, Human Sexuality Committee was, this is a committee that, as far as I know, hadn't been meeting, but they pulled us all together. So they pulled up myself, and I had a sex ed specialist working with me, Representative Hemingway, a couple of other representatives and a senator that wanted to be involved in this. And our legislative vice president, who was not Don at the time, but someone else. There was the superintendent and his assistants. There's just a big group, and then the Frank Wojcik, who was over health. And so we all sat down together and said, okay, we've got a problem. We still have a problem with STDs. So, and this law has been in place for a long time, and so it's not really dealing with the issue as well as we would like it to. And what do we do to make it so that teachers don't have this problem with what to teach and how much to teach? And there was a few teachers teaching a little more than they should have, and so they were a little bit in danger of the law. So What did we come up with? And we came up with the proposal, let's make a teaching tool that's standardized, that all of them use. Let's make a video and let the video teach it. And they like that idea. PowerPoint, yeah, that would be a lot easier because districts could take that and say, we're okay with this part, we're not okay with that part. So we, you know, so that was the proposal. So that, now we have 2010, and we came up with Senate Bill 54, Health Education Amendments, okay? So sponsor was Senator Stephen Urquhart. Senator Urquhart's from St. George. He was very concerned about what was going on in his child's school and that they were not teaching enough about contraception in the school, and the teachers were scared to teach it. And there was there's a problem down there like everywhere else. So he agreed to sponsor the bill, and we were actually involved in writing the language for that bill, a lot of it. Sex ed specialist wrote a lot of the language for that bill. The intent was to direct the state office to develop a consistent teaching tool for contraception that all health teachers could use, such as a video or PowerPoint presentation. The bill didn't even get out of committee. There's some other groups up at the legislature that are very conservative, more conservative than the PTA. PTA is very conservative, but they did not want, I think they had other ideas, and you'll see maybe what those other ideas are in the third bill. So they opposed it, and it failed. But the Utah State Office of Education did not need a bill to provide this tool for health teachers, and so they created a PowerPoint, and they trained the health teachers in its use. It was an excellent PowerPoint. It started out with abstinence as 100% best method, how it prevents pregnancy and STDs, STIs. Then the second one was condoms, and that they don't prevent 100% pregnancy, or there's some kinds of STIs that they don't prevent at all. So it went down through all the different kinds of contraceptive methods, and then how well they prevent pregnancy and STDs, STIs, sorry, old school. And I think the message that I got from it was that abstinence was the best policy, and so it was a great tool. What we liked about it, too, as parents, is that the state office could put it on their website, and when you're taking sex ed here in Utah, you have to get a letter from your parents signed, bring it to school, to be able to go to class when they teach the sex ed classes. If you don't bring your letter, you go to the library for those classes. So it's called an opt-in system. And so we like that because we want to know what's being taught. We could have gone on the internet to see this PowerPoint that the kids were going to see, and we could say, I like that, go ahead, go to class. Or I'd rather teach you myself from this. Or there's parents who, you know, they make their own choices about what they want. And so we were very excited about this tool. However, a Utah legislator and a representative of a very influential conservative group went to the State Office of Education and demanded that it not be used, that it not be taken off of the website and not be used. And so it was removed. And also what sparked this was a maturation program called Growing Up Comes First, designed by Planned Parenthood. Now, Planned Parenthood in Utah is not the same as Planned Parenthood in New Jersey or anywhere else. They know that the type of people that we have here, we're very conservative. They designed a very good maturation program, and I saw it, and I could see nothing wrong with it. And so BTA thought it was great. The state office thought it was great. They had it on their website as under the list of approved maturation programs. But apparently someone noticed, and this is not good, it shouldn't have been on there, but there was on this maturation program, there was a little guide, parent guide. And on the back of the parent guide were some websites that parents could go to for more information. One of them was the National Planned Parenthood website. That is not, I wouldn't recommend you go to that website. And as a parent, I don't think that's where I'd want to get my information, but there were some parents very upset about that. So the state office yanked the Growing Up Comes First from the state office, they do not no longer encourage it. However, if school districts want to use it, they still can. As far as I know, they can also use the PowerPoint, and I know that some of them are. Okay? So that's what sparked HB 363, which you are probably familiar with because there was a huge to-do over that. Have you heard of it? Has everybody heard of this HB 363, which was the health, well, it's called Health Education Amendments, but it was a sex ed bill that went to the governor. And I'm not going to tell you what happened because that's what Don's going to do. But just to tell you about this bill, the sponsor was Representative Bill Wright. The bill would remove all instruction of contraception statewide. All instruction. Nobody would be able to teach about contraception. It would allow whole school districts to opt out of the whole human sexuality unit, which is a unit that talks about importance of relationships and dating and you know, good and bad, all kinds of things. It's a very good unit, not just about contraception. So here's the current law in Utah. Districts can opt out of teaching contraception, but not of the whole human sexuality unit. So currently there's 4 districts in Utah that choose abstinence-only instruction. The rest of us, districts are abstinence-based and can talk about the limitations of contraception. So Jordan, Canyons, Provo, and Nebo are the 4 districts right now that do not teach abstinence at all. So that's there already. That's in the bill. They can already choose not to teach it. It's an opt-in system. Parents have to sign, which I mentioned to you before. So parents don't have to let their, they can already not have their child go to school that day. So we felt like the law, the way it was already fine because parents are in control and they get to decide, and a whole district can opt out of the contraception, but not out of the human sexuality unit. Okay, so HB 363, as much as we tried to, we opposed it, we sent out lots of alerts, and Don will talk more about this, but it passed the House and the Senate and was on the governor's desk waiting for his signature. So I'm not going to go any more into that, but I just want to tell you about a YouTube video that on this, if you want to just type in HB 363 abstinence only in YouTube. There's a video that interviews myself and a very good professor at BYU who teaches health teachers. His name's Cougar Hall. Is that great for BYU? His name is Cougar Hall. he was very good, though. He came up and testified in the hearings about how important it is for students to have more information. He was great. So I want to thank you for your attention, and I'm going to turn it over to Don Davies, our legislative vice president.
Okay, now I want to give you just a little bit of history of who I am. I am a graduate of BYU, but a lot of years ago, and I worked up until I was married in 1980, and then I had several children pretty quick, and stay-at-home mom, and I have a degree in social work, and worked with mentally handicapped adults. And then as I got my kids going into school, I got involved in PTA. I've been involved in PTA now for 26 years, and at the state level. And I did go back to school. My husband had open heart surgery several years ago, and I was concerned about having to work and got a paralegal degree at that point. My degree was pretty useless. And I did practice being a paralegal for 3 years in trust and will and estate law, nothing to do with what I've been doing lately. And that brings me, and I no longer work, and I'm now back in PTA full time and have been most of my life. I want to tell you just a little bit about the mission of PTA. PTA's mission is to support and speak on behalf of children. We are the Parent-Teacher Association, but we are parents and teachers who speak on behalf of children. We do not speak on behalf of parents, and we do not speak on behalf of teachers. And we assist parents in developing the skills they need to raise and protect their children. And then we encourage parents and public involvement in the public schools throughout the nation. So it's important that you understand that PTA is a non-sectarian, non-political And we never speak about people, we only speak about issues. So therefore, we cannot advocate on behalf of anyone running for office. We do not tell people how to vote, who to vote for, but we do help them to know the questions to ask as you speak to legislators who are running for office and to your city and local governments. Now to go on to this bill. Before you can talk about what happened in the sex ed bill, you need to understand what the purpose of the government entities are in Utah. When you look at the Utah Constitution and what the legislature's role is in education, it is very specific. It says the legislature shall provide for the establishment and maintenance of the state education system, including a public education system which shall be open to all children of the state, and a higher education system. Both shall be free from sectarian control. And then it goes on to talk to how they should be free for all to attend. So in that, they provide the overall education system. Then you look at what the next entity in Utah is, which is the State Board of Education, the USOE, Utah State Office of Education, and their role is the State Board of Education shall establish curriculum requirements, and that is in our state code, in section 53 of the state code. So they establish what the curriculum, what the curriculum requirements are. Then when you get to your local school boards, which are each school district has a local school board, when you get to the local school board shall implement the core curriculum utilizing instructional materials that best correlate to the core curriculum and graduation requirements. So, where is curriculum decided? It's at the local school board level. The legislature should not be putting into the Utah code what our curriculum shall be. We are trying to do it in sex ed. They've done it in American government, and trying to dictate what can be taught in the districts. But that is a local control issue. And Utah PTA is very strong on the attitude that we believe in local control. Parents should control their child's education. And that can only happen at the local level, not at the state level. So for us, those three areas of our Utah Constitution and Code tell us very much so that the legislature should not dictate what curriculum and what material should be taught and what should not be taught. The way that Utah worked, as Liz pointed out earlier, was through resolutions. I'd like to explain to you the resolution process that Utah PTA has. This year, Utah PTA had the wonderful opportunity to put forward a resolution with Pat Jones, Senator Pat Jones, at the legislature. And when we put together the resolution, and it was on the importance of parental involvement in the education of their child, and as we put together our resolution to send to the Senate, and it was a joint resolution that would be passed by both, we did our process. And when we sent our resolution, they told us what we did wasn't really necessary. And what PTA does is we require for every whereas that we have, which tells the facts of what's important, for every whereas you must have two primary sources. If you know what primary and secondary sources are, primary is based on studies and has, I can't think of the word off the top of my head, sorry, but it is has a measurement to it. And secondary sources might be an article that somebody writes, but it's more opinion. And we require primary sources where there is real study and outcomes that are research-based. That's the words I was thinking of. They are research-based. And as we sent our resolution, we included all of our resources that we got that from, and they said, oh, we don't use those. And we're like, whoa, well, that's pretty important to us. So as we put forward our resolutions, we always have to have those two sources for every whereas. And as we did the resolution on sex ed, they had those resources, and they are available at our office for people to always review. They aren't on the website. That would be just too cumbersome, and they're large reports, many of them. So Utah did its resolution process, and I have 4 pages of resolutions that we now have on our website. We probably have about 60 resolutions on our website that we can address, not just at the legislature. It's also in educating parents. It's not always a legislative thing that we do. So after the resolutions are put together, then as the legislative session starts. Even now, they are beginning to put bills together at the legislature. It is my job to be aware of the bills that might be coming forward, and I always look for those that relate to children's issues. And my job is to kind of go through all the bills, and let me tell you, there are about 800 bills that come forward every session at the legislature. We go through, see every bill that relates to children, and then we assign those to our 7 commissions. And I may take a few, but we try to divide those up, and we have them followed by the commissioners and a committee they put together. As we put our positions on each of those bills, our resolutions are passed at our May convention and also our October convention. We have two conferences or conventions a year where resolutions can be addressed. And when we pass those, then they are good for us to use, and our membership decides that. And then as we begin to see the bills, the commissioners decide the positions. For the process to really take place, there is still more that has to happen, because we as a board, there are only would be 8 of us, and with our executive committee, 17, who would really be deciding all the positions on all of our bills. We don't want that. We want our members involved. So we have what we call a legislative advocacy committee that consists of PTA members as well as the Utah PTA Board of Directors that want to sit on that. We have about 50 who sit on that committee, and we meet once a month throughout the year, every month on the fourth Wednesday of every month from noon to 2, where we discuss upcoming legislative possible issues. And then as the legislature starts, we meet every Wednesday throughout the legislature at the Capitol, and we discuss every bill, and our positions that you'll find on our website are decided by discussed amongst that committee of over 50 people, and then the executive committee ratifies those decisions that are made at that meeting to move those forward as the Utah PTA position. So we have quite an extensive process. It is not a one-man show. It's not just, you know, a few of us. We try to include as much as possible. And on top of that, then we also have what we call our member-to-member network. I have a group, it's a Google group, and I have about 875 members, close to 900 members. I haven't input everybody. We're hoping you'll get over 1,000 this year. It's growing all the time. And it consists of all the legislative vice presidents throughout, or legislative contacts throughout our state with every school. And so as issues come up, I am able to send out through that Google group to all of our members that are in that group upcoming legislative issues and what PTA's position is, giving them our resolution and the exact resolves that address that issue, so they know where our position comes from. It's always done based on a resolution. And then we move forward asking them to do some action. Now, do they have to take the action that I tell them to take? No. It's always a personal choice. So those members who choose then to move that forward, because and then in each school you have all your PTA members in a database as well, they can move that out to all the members of Utah PTA, of which right now there are about 124,000 members throughout the state. And that's our communication network. So we can move things fairly quickly through that network, and then people make the choice whether or not they'll take the position we have. And they're also free to take a different position and call the legislators, but they cannot take that position using the name of PTA if it's outside of our resolution. When we have a resolution and you're speaking for PTA, you must speak to that resolution. That brings me to just one more fact, is I've had to speak dealing with the sex ed bill this year. Many people have asked me what I think personally. I never tell people what I think personally. I am passionate for the PTA position. Whether or not I believe that personally, there shouldn't be one person who knows that, and that's my firm belief. I speak on behalf of PTA, and so therefore I speak PTA's position. My own personal position may be different, but it may not. And I never tell people what I think personally. And I think that's really important as you go about doing a job for whether, no matter who you're lobbying for, it has to be that you're passionate about what their position is, not necessarily on your own position. And so, as we came now to the sex ed bill, as that bill began to go through the process, it was a Senate bill, right? House. It was a House bill. In the House, we work really hard to try to defeat bills. And sometimes in the Senate, we're not quite so hard at working, although we still speak and we try to speak and work with those senators. The Senate is a little more conservative, it would be a nice way to put that. And so as a bill goes to them, there's only 29 people in the Senate. You have to have 11 or whatever the number is, 50% plus one, to be able to have that bill fail. And so as you look at that number, the Utah Senate, as it's been constituted in the past, once they set their mind, it's really hard to work with them, and it was it's difficult. So we work in the House, and we worked really hard. And the House vote this year was 45 to 28 with two abstaining. So as it passed the House. So it passed, and we had worked hard, but it was getting harder to work in the House this year. And I don't know why, but when it went to the Senate, it was a 19 to 10 vote. And so let me tell you, on the House floor, it's really funny. As PTA discussed this at our conference, we had a bunch of eighth graders walk in right in the middle of the discussion. As you're talking about contraceptives, the very thing this bill is telling you not to talk about, we're talking about with kids. And so we had to stop our conversation and say, you know, we cannot do this here. We don't have parental permission. And we had to stop our conversation. When it went to the House this year, in the House is sitting fourth grade's classrooms, and they're talking about, you know, it was pretty wild. And, you know, they don't stop their conversation, so those fourth grade teachers are jumping their kids up, running out of the room, and in walk a bunch of Boy Scouts. And so you have this crazy, and when we got to the Senate this year, we're sitting there, and there sits a bunch of fifth grade kids as they discuss the sex ed bill. And so every place it was discussed, it was like everything that bill was speaking against was happening right as you, yes, they even did the process. And so it was, and it was pretty funny to watch in some ways, although sad that they didn't realize what they were doing themselves, and they didn't stop their conversations, PTA did. And so as that bill passed both places, and it went to the governor, then the veto process could take place. And when a governor looks at the veto, he has to see what are the chances of him being overridden. And as he looked at his numbers, he has to be overridden by a two-thirds vote. Well, the House certainly was not a problem. The Senate, it was 19 to 10, so 20, you know, you have that one number. So it was really close. Would anybody switch? So PTA knew that the governor needed real support, as did a lot of organizations out there realized the governor needed that push to say, you have our support, and that we are going to have those legislators see what the will of the people is. And there was a man named Paul Krueger. PTA did not start the petition. I don't know if you heard of the petition that happened. PTA did not start the petition that happened. It was a Paul Kruger. He was a retired fireman, and he drives a school bus part-time for his profession now. And he just got upset as he saw that these kids were being denied and parents being denied the right to choose what their children would hear. He has grandchildren in the system. So he started a petition, and he looked for sources for where to put that petition. And what he found was MoveOn.org. Does anybody here know what MoveOn.org is? Can you tell me just a little bit?
It's a democratic group that basically encourages political action.
That's it. And it's considered a more liberal group. It's not a conservative group. And so as PTA saw that position, that petition that was coming from MoveOn.org, there was concern because we are a conservative. Parents in this state are conservative. And to send them to MoveOn.org might have been a problem. And so started listening to what was happening on the news. And Doug Wright had a lot of discussion on this. I don't know if you got to listen to the radio during that time. It was kind of his main focus. And he put a link to that petition on his website on KSL. My thought was, let's link through KSL. KSL is the more conservative radio station. It wasn't KUD. It wasn't, you know, you name the station that somebody might have a problem with. And so I linked through on our member-to-member. I linked into it through KSL and let them link into the website that Paul Kruger had put together for this petition. And I watched those numbers as they happened in our state. They were growing exponentially, and it was awesome to see. And when he finally took in a week, I think it was a week and 2 days, he took the petition to the governor with over 40,000 signatures in that amount of time to ask him to veto that bill and allow parents their right to opt into a program where their children could learn about what was important in educating them about what are the concerns with sex, premarital sex. And it was always abstinence-based. It was never, don't speak abstinence. And so we sent that out to our 800, at that point we had 800 plus members. And not only were the members asked to sign that petition, we also said, don't stop there, call his office. And so you can sign, you can call, send emails. We wanted them inundated. And so that's what we did. And we sent those, the governor's office, as we talked with a few of the people who we are friends with in the governor's office, they said as those phone calls came in, the office staff would just be sitting there, another veto, another, and the numbers were exponentially higher for that veto than they ever were for please let the bill stand and sign it. And so that gave the governor the ability to know that he had the support of the people. And I think that that's what's important, is for us as members of society to have our voice heard. We have to take the action. And I know that there were many outside of PTA who also entered into that. We're hoping that PTA was a huge force in that. But we know that there are many people who take the opportunity to use their voices in our political system and to have their voices heard. And it is more important than ever that we begin to do that as we watch what's happening in our state. We now have gotten involved this last year in the caucus process. If you know the voting process in Utah, it starts with the caucuses. And if you, when I used to go to my caucus meeting, there were seven people. And seven people decided who would run from my area. And only one of those got to go, and so or two. And so the representation was nil on those caucuses. This year, as a result of a lot that's happened politically, we became proactive in that system, trying to change. We don't tell people who they can vote for, who not to vote for. We give them the issues and give them questions to ask, and then we say, go get involved in the caucus system this year. My caucus alone, which only had seven in the past, went to about 50, which is, to me, still very sad. When you're voting in our voting district, there were over 2,000 people. Representation is minimal. But others became huge, and I want to tell you that we're going to make a difference, and hopefully we'll see a difference at the legislature and be able to have them see that the public does have a voice and the public's going to use their voice. And so that was the process that happened in trying to get that bill vetoed, and the governor then had the ability to sign the bill. There was never anything done in the Senate or House to try to override his veto, because as you see the people's voice, I think even those who have voted for it may not have tried to override his veto, because the will of the people was so loud at that point. And so there was no attempt to override his veto. And now we have the same bill that's been in place now since 2009, I think is when that bill was put in place, where the parents can opt in and school districts are free to choose. And if you want your voice heard, get to that local level. If parents want something different, be at the local level. My feeling is very little should be legislated at the legislature. Mostly we should be taking care of it in our cities and our own communities. And if we do that, the legislature, I don't know what they need to do, but they can do their thing too. So that is pretty much the process. And I'll let you know, this year we're dealing with two issues pretty strongly: the Common Core, which has been a major issue in Utah. We will stay on top of that. And then we will also be working on the state school board nomination process. If you want to know more about that, contact Utah PTA. We can use all the help we can get to try to get that process better. So thank you for your time, and I hope that you got a little information and understand a little of how we function in our advocacy efforts. We are not lobbyists in PTA, we are advocates. Thank you.
We'll now give the remainder of time to questions. Please speak clearly into the microphone and say your name and something about yourself.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies, for coming this morning. My name's Ashley Jolin. I'm a political science and English major. I worked at the legislature as an intern this past session. My question is, well, first off, I saw on your, one of your diagrams showed that in 2006 and 2007, there was an increase in sexual activity, I believe, in the state. Do you guys have a reason that you think that happened? And also, is the curriculum as stands that effective, or at least the way it's taught, compared to the national efforts of in other states of trying to help students have safe sex or not have sex?
Can you hear me? I would say the on the 2006, was it 2008, 2009?
I think it was 2006,
2007.
2007,
yeah.
2006, 2007,
yeah.
And it went up?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It
went up.
It did.
Yeah. Since nothing's changed as far as what they actually can teach, in spite of these different bills, I don't really know. I do know, though, that they have found that there is something that is working. In spite of all the other things we try to do, there is one thing that is working, and it's a HBO show called 16 and Pregnant. Is that right? I haven't seen it. That is making a difference. Kids are beginning to realize that there's a real world out there, and children aren't toys, and it's not a piece of cake to get pregnant and not be married and not, So.
What was that again, please?
16 and Pregnant. Am I right? Is that the name of it? On MTV. Okay, MTV, not HBO. 16 and Pregnant. And that is actually making a big difference. And the other question you had?
And I was just, compared to other states and just the general nation's efforts.
Yes.
How well are we doing compared to other states, and in urban areas especially? Keeping the sexual activity.
Yeah, we're way down. I mean, the fact that we have any at all, though, that's a problem. But yes, Utah is. I think it has more to do with the parents in Utah. I mean, we got great parents here, and I think I've never found a parent that doesn't care about their child. As much as I hear kids say my parents don't care about me, I've never found parents that don't care about their children. I've found parents that are working so hard to just get food on the table that it doesn't look like they care, but they do. But I think that we're way below the national average, and it's because of the families and parents that we have here.
And I also think that it also has to do with, I think we are more knowledgeable, and I think that knowledge continues to grow and increase. And as we educate parents and as we educate kids, there is going to be a shift. But I think the very slide that was the most telling was, we may be down in pregnancies, but we're not down in STIs, which means that we may have taught them some important things, but probably not the whole yet, where they need to realize that that chlamydia number is off the charts and very frightening.
Okay, my name is Lexi Wright. I'm a sophomore, political science and international studies question, and I have a question for you in regards to House Bill 363. I went to Catholic school, so sex education, you didn't have any input. It was a private institution, they made the decision for you. But I'm wondering, with your opt-in system that you offer for parents who do not want their child to be a part of that, is there any outside information you can provide those parents and students with that will educate them outside of the school system so that they are educated and not blind about these issues?
They're actually interesting thing, comment that was made by a person that heads up a very conservative group is, they can go on the Planned Parenthood site.
It's very good, they stated, which I
think the Utah one I would suggest. I'm not sure Utah. I'd recommend the national.
And I do think that even churches are becoming more proactive in this. As we spoke with a church, they told us about their program. And I think the churches are a big driving force, whether the Catholic Church is one of those, I'm not sure of. But I know that many churches are now addressing that with their youth in their churches. So maybe that the word is getting out and they're moving to going to where the parents can feel best at that discussion being where their values are.
Hi, I'm Chase Hunsaker. I have a question towards you. You were saying that the only thing that the state legislation has ever tried to, like, make everyone in the state unified was about the U.S. history and then about sex ed. You said something like that. My question is, they also have state tests that they made us take through elementary, junior high, and high school. Would that not be considered, like, a mandatory thing that we all had to learn the same thing?
Those were your criteria reference testing that they had you take, which meant that they had the standard that you were to meet, and they were testing to see if you met that standard. But they weren't determining how you met that standard. So the state sets in math, by third grade, you should know your times tables. So your criteria reference test at that point would have said, do you know your times tables 1 through 12? And they would have had a test that allowed that. In English, you should know how to diagram a sentence in eighth grade. So your test would be asking, do you know how to diagram a sentence? It wouldn't tell you how to teach to get to that, how you diagram a sentence. It would tell you that you should be able to do that by a grade level. So it really isn't to the curriculum, it's to the standard you should achieve.
Okay, then I guess a follow-up. Is there a standard for sex ed that they have to reach or not?
No. Sex ed is a optional thing, and for Utah to have that as part of the curriculum is optional. It doesn't have to be there. And that's how some of these groups feel that it shouldn't be.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Gamble. I'm a political science major and a sophomore. I was just wondering that since we're in a more conservative state and there's a more overall conservative mindset, if the parents opted the child out, if there's a major issue with them just being uneducated about the issue of sex education, do you think that's still a prevalent issue, or do you think that the parents still will at home do a fairly good job?
I feel that most parents, if they opt their child out, they are making a decision that they know is going to be hard on that child. Because I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to go to the library during the sex ed. And I think most kids are going to want to hear that information. And I think parents that opt their child out are doing it because they want to teach them themselves. And I hope, I can't say that I know, but I hope the parents are doing a good job of teaching those kids. Because kids, you know what, you'll find that information wherever you want. You're going to find it on the internet. And the concern is you'll find some sites that you shouldn't be looking at. So, you know, we really hope that most parents won't opt their child out, but they have that choice, and
So if they make that choice, let's hope that they're educating their child. And yes, it might be happening that they're not, but I'm sure the child's getting that information from somewhere. Unfortunately, it may not be what the parents want them to have.
And I think it's important to note also that the opt-out is very, very negligible. It's a very small percentage who opt out of not having their children hear it. So I believe that in the public school system, majority, I would say 99% are probably hearing it.
Hello, my name is John Christensen. I'm a student here and a candidate for the State House. I'm wondering, in the local governments in this state, how often do you find, with their current makeup, that they're receptive to your message?
Are you talking city governments?
City governments, and then the groups of the legislature, just local governments that we have in this state.
The city governments work very well with the school districts and PTA. They do a lot to deal with what is happening to keep the children safe as they go to from school, to allow the children to have overhead passes. And PTA and parents, not just PTA, often go and deal with city ordinances and get a very good reception, because we know the process of not going as a single person. You get the support behind you, and schools work to make sure that that happens, that they're going with a petition from several. When I worked with some schools out in Tooele this year who were dealing with the band wanting to start to play at 6 a.m. with 40 schools around having elementary children who would not be able to be asleep past 5:30 because the cars arrived, the lights hit their houses, and worked with them through a process, and they were able to stop that noise ordinance from being changed. And so I think that city government is very receptive, and I believe that the legislature, we have some who work with PTA and with parents well, but I honestly feel that some believe that we aren't. I'm not a political science major. I'm not educated in. But then, as I look at the legislature, some of them aren't. I know a real estate guy, a lot of real estate people at the legislature, and I think their faith in us is that they think we're just moms who were there for the cookie and bake sales and we're trying to do something. But I think we're becoming better known, and I think we're seeing that change, especially as we've been able to have some successes in the last 2 to 3 years, 4 years maybe. We've stopped some major bills from hurting parents and hurting the opportunity for parents is to be able to have their voices in the schools and have their children's needs met properly. So I think as they see PTA be effective, that is changing, and we have more approaching us to say, let's start working together now so we're on the same page, and what do we need to do in our bill to help make you happy with us. So I think we're getting better known for being proactive in the proper way. I think that that's an important piece as we do that, is that we don't say the bad things of the legislature. I honestly believe they're all there trying to do their best, and their thoughts may be different than what the PTA's thoughts are, but we're all there for the good, and so it's learning how to work together. So speaking positively, I think also helps to keep that conversation open and move forward.
So I'd also like to tell you about an experience I had at the local level. I was the director for the Granite District PTA. So I was region director for all of the PTAs of Granite District. We had about 87 PTAs. And there was a bill that was going in the legislature about splitting school districts. And we could see the advantage of having this larger district and all the great things we had, because we only paid one superintendent and we only had one group that, and they took care of everything. And there were so many great benefits from it. So we wanted to stop that. And I was on my Cottonwood High School Community Council. I was also region director, so I knew about this bill. I knew I was working on it up at the legislature, not officially as a PTA, but as an individual and as a member of my community council, because what that bill would have done was closed our high school. And so I worked with my community council, and we got parents together, and because it would have made our high school part of Murray City, and all the different areas in Granite District would become part of the cities in Granite. And Murray didn't need a second high school, so they would have closed us. So we got a parent meeting together, and we told them all that we needed them to go to the Salt Lake County Council meeting. And I made badges that were bright, and it said, you know, stop the school district from being split, save Cottonwood High School. And we had them at that Salt Lake County Council meeting. And everyone that came in the door, we had them that supported us, and almost everybody did. So we had everybody wearing them where they could see them. So we all sat in that community county council, and they looked around the room, and they saw all these badges. There was no question what we wanted. And it was their ability to vote whether they were going to allow the split of Granite District to go on the ballot or not. Okay, they had that ability, and they voted right there that it was not going to go on the ballot, that there was not going to be a split of the district. So as you can see, that I don't know if you're aware that Jordan District did go ahead and split, and it's a mess, and it
it's
was
a mess.
Just horrible divorce. It was, anyway.
This concludes the remainder of our time. Please join me in thanking our guests.